I know him to be someone who is deeply committed both to the natural environment and to living a life of integrity. When we were chatting last September, I was struck by what that way of being looks like when it's turned towards retirement planning. I'm delighted to have him here today to share those ideas.
Okay, so I think this is on. Thank you for having me here today, and to Janet for working with me on preparing this talk. I value the opportunity to speak with you about such an important transition in someone's life, retirement. I'm here to share my reflections about my upcoming retirement and how I plan to make it more meaningful. So, next slide. I haven't retired yet, although I've been thinking about retirement for many years, especially the financial planning aspect of it. I only seriously started thinking about finding meaning in retirement about 3 years ago, when I was 63. I felt that 65 was the magic retirement age, and that I should look at making some preparations. Like many people, I have many concerns about retirement. I've been teaching and doing community work and research for 40 years, 27 years on faculty in biology at Douglas College here in New Westminster, just a few blocks from here, and 13 years as an assistant professor in the School of Environmental Studies at the University of Victoria, where I work with Janet. Many faculty in my position often slip into volunteer work with a community group in retirement, but I have volunteered so much already over my 40-year work life and have endured much of the politics and downside of what that entails, and I don't really want to keep doing that. So I prefer to do something different. I'm also not interested in doing things to keep busy. So I did have this fantasy about repairing some wicker chairs that we have that were broken and starting a furniture repair hobby, but I sort of abandoned that for now. But I want to take advantage of the extra time, and I want to be more philosophical and spiritual, or to just be. If you don't plan to do a lot of volunteer work in retirement, I feel that there are two other major choices. One is to pack in as much living as you possibly can in your remaining years. A common scenario is to make a list of places to see or adventures to experience and to check off as many of these as you can from your list. So this is the bucket list. The other scenario involves a more spiritual path, giving serious thought to what really matters to you and finding meaning in community and relationships, friends and family. Although I'm considering both options, or a mix of the two since they aren't mutually exclusive, I lean more towards community and spirituality. I believe that the pale, the bucket list that is popular with many people, is a distraction. It's a goal romanticized through advertising that encourages vacations or cruises in faraway places. It reminds me of the Freedom 55 mantra that implies that whatever your work life was up until the age of 55, or what your personal life was before you turned 55, was a chore, that it was a burden of some kind. You just couldn't wait to retire and not have to do it anymore. Like the Freedom 55, the bucket list takes us away from the magic of the here and now. It takes us away from being content with the present. It is symptomatic of the tension between being rooted in community versus trying to explore as much of the world as possible, of the tension between commitment to place versus being disengaged and focused on oneself. Next slide. To get used to the idea of retiring, I put some prepare to stop signs around my office as a reminder. As it happens, I was in a meeting just a few weeks ago, in our department, and I saw one of these signs on a notice board in the room. I was surprised by that because it was in my office before, the notice board. But we had just undergone a significant renovation in our department that involved reconfiguring office space. And this notice board from my old office had somehow been repurposed and had a new home in this meeting room. And I was looking at it when I looked up from where I was. Surprisingly, the prepare to stop sign had survived the move that had also involved a year in storage. I was amused to see the prepare to stop sign, realizing that I was still at work and my retirement had not happened as quickly as I thought. But it is coming soon, and I am still thinking about what it would mean to me. I discuss a lot about what to do in retirement with my wife, Annie, who's here, especially around the breakfast table or at dinner. She encourages me to talk about it because she is concerned about the major change in my life and how it will affect us. It has an impact on her. I have been fortunate in that I have had a very meaningful work life, and she would like to see me have plans to find meaning in retirement. Annie asked me what excites me, what stimulates my imagination. She encouraged me to start writing down the insights and stories that came up in our conversations, and that was the genesis of the Beyond the Pale website. She bought me the URL for my birthday. That's a nice present. It is an experiment of sorts designed to help me discover what I value and what I want to do with my time. This will help to make our retirement together happier. The stories on my website are about events that have caught my attention and offer excitement and fulfillment. I'm a biologist, so they often revolve around something biological. They describe another way for me to look at the world. I feel that you don't have to fly thousands of miles to see a famous site for a few hours so you can check it off on a list of things you wanted to do before you die. A more fulfilling way to spend retirement is to celebrate nature and personal relationships where you are. Many indigenous peoples from cultures with a commitment to place enjoy a rich and meaningful life, having lived in the same place for generations, with little or no aspirations to see the rest of the world. A meaningful life is enjoyed where they are, and we revere them for that. I envision that living beyond the pale will involve broadening my perspectives. Even the trivial and mundane can be deeply fulfilling if seen as mindfulness, as celebrating the ordinary. So the trivial and mundane is something that I think about and how you make that special. And the idea is you don't think about it too much and then it becomes special. I resist having the moment presented as a void that needs filling in an exceptional way, requiring that we proclaim our experiences as the best or the first or the most of something. We can instead make the ordinary extraordinary, the trivial mindful. It is our perspective that makes us fearful of the ordinary and to see our lives as an empty bucket, a perspective that may have been shaped by advertisers or competitive colleagues or neighbors. I find lots of people ask me, you know, what places I'm going to go see in retirement, and I hadn't even thought about it, but they immediately tell me about all the places they've gone to, right? So it's kind of a little competitive. This perspective is not as true a reflection of ourselves because of this fear of missing out, which can drive us to fill the bucket with a list of things to experience and see, which often gets us to reject the things which are often really important to us. The fear of missing out can prevent us from enjoying the stillness and space that exists outside the bucket beyond the pale. Next. I was struck by just how rich an experience can be in place when I read an interview in the Globe and Mail on January 5th of this year with Haida manga artist and author Mitchell Nicol Yohannglis. Originally from Haida Gwaii, he now lives on Bowen Island. He was asked, if you can live anywhere in British Columbia, where would it be? He answered, I'm good on the island. I had thought he was talking about Haida, but he's talking about Bowen. He was then asked, if you can live anywhere else in the world, where would it be? He answered, yep, still good here. Admittedly, most of us do not have the same attachment to place experienced by indigenous peoples, to have an extraordinary ancestry, a history with roots going back 9,000 years in geological time, or since time immemorial to the people. Next slide. Although Michael produces traditional Haida art, he is also known for manga and paintings he has done on recycled Volvo sunroof panels. So this is one of these recycled Volvo sunroof panels that he's painted. A little eccentric. Okay, the next slide. I think it is important to recognize that although some European colonials came to British Columbia in search of wealth with no commitment to place and displaced indigenous peoples in the process, other colonials or their descendants came from families that were displaced by wars in Europe or elsewhere, having their homes and land confiscated, or they were displaced by world economic histories like famine or from wars. They are refugees. I am the son of Romanian refugees from World War II, who had their home of 200 years, a town called Liepling, go figure Liepling, taken by allies. By the Russians. They had lost their own place. They had been uprooted and forever were unable to claim a long ancestry anywhere anymore, and they cannot go back to the land of their ancestors. In the absence of a heritage, what we can do is to cultivate an attachment to a place. So this is your rightful place. Where do you belong? So if you can't point to an ancestry, what is that place? So that place is where you plan on staying, where you plan on growing new roots, where you make a commitment to community. That is your rightful place. To be good here, as Michael has said about Haida Gwaii and Bowen Island. Next slide. Besides continuing to broaden my perspectives in retirement, I see retirement as an opportunity to strengthen connections with the spiritual world. My wife and I recently saw a performance called Flicker by the dancers of De Hamelin in Victoria, in which there is a veiled curtain between the real world and the spirit world. The story is of a young Gitxsan man who embarks on a journey to adulthood. The performance combines West Coast graphic design, projections, and shadow dancing to describe a story where the man initially goes out hunting mountain goats, decides not to kill any, and in return the goats later save his life. In the play, the threshold between the spirit world and the real world was represented by a translucent curtain, by a veil. Characters in the performance moved from the spirit world, from behind the curtain, to out in front into the real world in front of the curtain during the performance. So they kept moving back and forth from the spirit world to the real world. Okay, next slide. What was especially intriguing to me as a biologist about the play was how the spirit world acted as a tapetum, reflecting events in the real world back out again into consciousness. So the veil, reality sort of went through the veil, hit the spirit world, and the spirit world reflected reality back out again into the real world. So this amplifies the significance of what is occurring. Anatomically, the tapetum is a reflective layer. I think like a biologist, I'm sorry, so it's a tapetum. Anatomically, the tapetum is a reflective layer behind the retina and the eyes of animals that are active at night or dawn and dusk, and when light is poor. So the tapetum results in eye shine. So what you're seeing there with a cat is an animal with a tapetum. So cats are moving around at times when there's poor light. And you can usually tell if an animal has a tapetum because the tapetum causes a problem if there's regular light, right? Because you have all this light bouncing around your eye. So to counteract that, the animals that have it have a slit pupil, right? And in the case of cats, it's vertical. In the case of sheep, it's sort of horizontal. Anatomically, the tapetum is a reflective layer behind the retina and the eyes of animals that are active. The tapetum results in eye shine, reflecting the light back out through the retina, and this almost doubles the stimulation of the visual cell, amplifying what the animal sees. So you can eat a carrot, you can eat carrots till your skin turns orange. You're not going to see as well as these guys. I see this amplification as one of the values of cultivating a spiritual presence in our lives. Our spiritual world reflects the real world back into our consciousness, helping to magnify more subtle meanings of events and to bring them into greater awareness for conscious thought. The more we encourage the spiritual, the more our lives become richer. Retirement for me is an opportunity to explore more abstract meanings of life. I love the ambiguity created by synergisms in nature. I am intrigued by the unpredictability created by unseen thresholds in nature that can have dramatic consequences. So sometimes those dramatic consequences are very dire. So this is like the mountain pine beetle and the devastation that it has caused, which has been the result of a threshold crossed by climate change, which allowed mountain pine beetles to survive the winter, and so they didn't have the winter mortality. So that was one hidden threshold. But there are more positive thresholds as well. And one of those thresholds occurs in meta communities in areas like forests. So once you get to a forest community, then there's a threshold where the forest becomes greater than the part of the trees. So this is really well described in a book called The Hidden Life of Trees by Peter Wollenben. A more abstract kind of threshold is what we see with a kinesis. So the kinesis is the first stimulus over there. A kinesis is a response to a stimulus that is non-directional, sort of like humidity. So you either like where you are or you don't like where you are. So you're sensing something, it's not directional, and you're responding to it. And if it's a directional stimulus, if you can see where it's coming from, it's easy to go to it or away from it. So that's called a taxis, like a taxi, like hailing a taxi. But it's a different meaning to that word. But in the case of a kinesis, it's different. With a kinesis, you're uncomfortable with where you are. And if you're uncomfortable with where you are, then you tend to travel faster and in straighter lines. And that gets you away from where you are. If you're happy with where you are, which is a positive kinesis, you tend to hang around, you turn more frequently, and you tend not to move as quickly. So you stay in your community, you visit the corner grocery store, you're not going to an airport, you're not flying away. So it's like the restless teenager syndrome. That's what a restless teenager is feeling. It's a kinesis. What I feel is that the bucket list encourages taxic responses, whereas the beyond the pale approach to life encourages a kinesis. It encourages you to be happy with where you are, or if you're not, then find a place where you're happy, and then you tend to stay in that place. Okay, next one. So originally, the kinesis was described, the first time I read about it, with sow bugs. You know, these wood lice, they're underneath a damp rag or something in the basement, you know, so they tend to stay in that place because of the moisture. Whereas on the right-hand side, a person's sort of response to it, in a kinesis sense, is not to hide underneath a damp rag, although some days maybe you want to crawl underneath a blanket. But, you know, you go to the public library or you meditate, you know, you're doing things that keep you in one place. Okay, next slide. One of the more mindful experiences of being in an extraordinary place, a special trip during retirement, is to enjoy the sunrise or the sunset, which can also be experienced at home as well if you make it a priority. Light is a powerful stimulus that significantly affects our vertebrate physiology, and twilight is an excellent example of such an effect. During the day, the spectral composition of sunlight does not vary much, but during twilight, at sunset and sunrise, the spectral signature of light shows distinct differences. Many vertebrates respond to these differences by resetting their biological clocks, their circadian rhythms. People respond to sunsets by winding down, becoming calmer. Part of this effect is psychological due to the day coming to a close. We are disengaging. However, part of the response is physiological. It can be due to the quality of the light itself at sunset and its role in resetting our biological clock. I find the thought of discovering such metabolic cues and enjoying their benefits exciting, and I look forward to discovering these in retirement. Cues beyond twilight and sunrise and sunset. Next slide. Our relationship with nature is complex, and it is hard to define, but I personally like the idea that my relationship with nature is honorable. We usually think in terms of taking from nature. It provides us with our needs and wants, but to be part of nature, there needs to be reciprocity. We need to give back. The act of being in a reciprocal relationship with nature is captured in the practice of the honorable harvest, as described by Robin Kimmerer, author of Braiding Sweetgrass, Indigenous Wisdom, Scientific Knowledge, and the Teaching of Plants. She is a member of the Potawatomi Nation. She prefers to use the word honorable in place of the usual sustainable in terms of this relationship with nature, because she points out that sustainable, at its very core, promotes the notion that we are doing things for the benefit of future human generations, perpetuating a taking paradigm. It does not embrace plants especially as persons, to be offered the same respect as animals. To Robin, the word honorable evokes a different reciprocity paradigm. Robin outlines a number of basic principles that characterize an honorable harvest that apply to every exchange between people and the earth. Next slide. And with Robin, the strawberries seem to figure heavily in her life. So that's why I have a picture of a strawberry here. In the article, How to Create a Culture of Good Health, in the winter 2016 issue of Yes Magazine, Robin explained what the basic principles of an honorable harvest are. First of all, to ask permission to the ones whose lives you seek, and then to abide by the answer. And the answer might be no, especially if you're talking about a species at risk. Never take the first plant you find. Never take the last plant you find. Harvest in a way that minimizes harm. Take only what you need and leave some for others. Use everything that you take. Take only that which is given to you. Share it as the earth has shared with you. Be grateful and reciprocate the gift. Robin suggests that we reciprocate the gifts of the earth with gratitude, in ceremony, through acts of practical reverence and land stewardship, in fierce defense of the places we love, in art, in science, in song, in gardens, in children, in ballots, in stories of renewal, in creative resistance, in how we spend our money and how we spend our precious lives, and by refusing to be complicit with the forces of ecological destruction. These are all gifts that we give back to nature. Whatever our gift, we are called to give it and to dance for the renewal of the world. Next one. Finally, retirement to me offers opportunities to discover new manifestations of nature, to discover novel ecosystems, which is the term that we use in the field that I teach in, and to explore what they represent. In ecological restoration, we initially aspire to establish the original ecosystem on a disturbed site when we restored it. The restoration target was set to return an area to the historic ecosystem for the area with plantings of native vegetation and the removal of all invasive species. Over time, it became clear that this was not a suitable approach in restoring areas that had been drastically altered, with little chance of reestablishing the original soil structure or drainage. So this raised the question, well, what do you do? And this is especially the case in urban restoration. So instead of the historic ecosystem that, as a restoration target, we now have a novel ecosystem, one with no natural analog and one that could include invasive species. It took many years of debate, at times very heated, amongst restoration ecologists to arrive at this approach. Next slide. A final story involves my sister, and she doesn't know I have this slide here. Not that her picture is there. But she included a trip to Italy to see some famous works of art and the Sistine Chapel in her bucket list. She had visions of spiritual moments sitting in the Sistine Chapel, communing with the artwork, and she could enjoy the splendor of places like the Sistine Chapel and others like it in solitude. The reality was that tourists were herded through the chapel and other famous places that she visited rather quickly, with little or no time for solitary reflection. She looked forward to this for a long time. She planned everything down to the last night and went there and was hustled through the Sistine Chapel. So it was very expensive for her to see these places, but the experiences fell far short of expectations. So in summary, what feels right to me in retirement is to be happy where I am, to live in my community like I am planning to stay, to embrace spirituality, to enrich my life, to broaden my understanding of the influences on my physical and emotional life, and to live my life honorably. Next slide. So in conclusion, I believe that our age and the wisdom that comes with it may make it more suitable for us to seek fulfillment in community, friendship, and wonder, in a retirement paradigm that celebrates hope, simplicity, and discovery of life's mysteries in place. It's not to say that you don't travel, but that's not the focus. I am still open to travel and adventure, but rather than pursuing a bucket list, I personally prefer to live my retirement life beyond the pale.